this week on The Inside Flap.
Just in my own family, two of my cousins are pilots. My best friend's a pilot. Her husband's a pilot. My father was a bush pilot. Wow. My grandfather was the chief of operations for Alaska Airlines back in the early 50s.
Wow.
You know, aviation runs strong in my family, but that doesn't make me unusual in Alaska by any means. If you let that bug get a hold of you, it will take all your time and all your money going forward. I mean, if you meet a brain surgeon in Alaska who is also a pilot, he will say to you, when you say, what do? He will say, I'm a pilot. Oh, yeah, I'm a brain surgeon.
Dave, you're needed in the ladies' room right now. And I got it. All I'm thinking of, I'm the one in charge.
First responder. Dave, the first responder medicus.
I forget that we're not the only ones at this restaurant. So I see three or four of our kids lined up at the door while I push open the door. And there's like one stall, and then there's a woman who I don't recognize staring at me.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the room to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably. That's right. It's back as per requested by numerous listeners and author Robert Justice. That's right. On the floral settee, it's Andrew Dowd.
Resting very comfortably, I might add.
Oh, I forgot to add.
Excelsior.
I forgot something. Resting comfortably on the floral settee.
No bare feet for me today.
No, socks. He's got socks on.
Thank you.
So you don't have to look at the bottom of his
I don't know if you usually soles. Do. I feel like you usually hide your feet.
Well, I normally have socks on. I'm like, even when I wear sandals.
It's with socks.
It's with socks.
Such socks always would have rocking that great look. Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us. We're all back together. Laura has been knocked back into consciousness with a healthy shot of prednisone. Mm-hmm. Andrew is back from Mexico. We are all outside. It's a beautiful day here in Colorado. The dogs are here in the snack shack, so it's great to have everybody back together. And we thank you so much for joining us. Here for episode 205, we have a great guest for you. Once again, we're joined by New York Times bestselling author and Edgar Award winner, Dana Stabenow, author of the Kate Shugak series. Her latest is number 23 in the series, or as I told her, it is Michael Jordan in the series. It is called Not the Ones Dead, and it's fantastic. I have a little recap of that book for you shortly, and our conversation with her, she's just so much fun to talk to. Really,
she's great.
Really a delight to talk to. I had a great time talking with her. Have that for you in just a bit. But first, I think we need it. It's about time to wrap up our England stories.
We have been milking it for all it's worth.
I hope you haven't been gotten sick of it. I know I heard from Tim today. He's the tour guide, Tim. He's been listening. So thanks to Tim for listening. I did want to say a few more words about Patient Zero. Andrew and I'm sure you've been listening to all the episodes as well.
So
every day, religiously.
You know who we're talking about when I tell you Patient Zero. So we're on the bus heading up to Windsor, and here's our tour guide, our local guide, Patient Zero. He's hacking into the microphone directly in front of us, I should add. He was literally right in the seat in front of us as we're heading up to Windsor, and he's at this point, we're getting closer to the castle, and he's telling the kids, he's giving this whole spiel about how important it is not to bring weapons into the castle. And I'm thinking, guy, we got in off of an airplane. Nobody has
any weapons. That's what I was thinking.
He's like, no knives, no pepper spray, nothing.
I was like, did you think we rushed out and bought our weapons as Americans?
I have no idea.
As soon as we landed?
So I always looking for a good chance for a good joke. I stand up and I lean over to him and I said, hey, listen, Patient Zero, come here. PZ, as I like to call him, PZ. Come here. Listen, let Sonny know he shouldn't bring his knife in. Because I immediately thought of who in this one group on our bus would be the least likely to have a knife on them. And it's the sweetest. Everybody loves Sonny. He's the sweetest, nicest kid in the world. I mean, he would never have a knife. So I just wanted Patient Zero to get on the microphone and say, Sonny, no knives. Well, instead, he gets all bent out of shape. Sonny? Where's Sonny? Is this true? Sonny, do you have a knife? Sonny, do you... No, and Sonny's looking like, he just killed his mother. He's looking really horrified.
Now, this is a group of kids from East High School.
Yes.
Now, you know, do they know anything about East High School, where you're going? Do they know who this group of kids is?
They did. I don't know if Patient Zero knew. Tim knew and Carrie knew. I don't know.
The stuff that Patient Zero said to us made me think that he didn't know what had happened about the shooting.
I think you might be right. Yeah.
I don't think he realized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, and I've made some jokes about tour guides, right? Uh-huh. But when I was over in Germany, we had some tour guides.
Hold on. Whoa. Sorry. All right. Stop the show. You mean to tell me you were in Germany?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Fascinating.
So, but we had some tour guides. We especially had a memorable one in Berlin that must have thought that absolutely the worst of Americans, that we're all lazy, that we all weigh, 300 pounds, right? And so we would take in a tour. So like, oh, and this is the Siegessäule, but it takes 200 stairs to get to the top. So that's nothing for you Americans. But some of these tour guides, it's funny just because they're so abrasive.
Right. And we were lucky enough
to... We were told that we were one of the more fit groups that they had seen from our country.
That's right, yeah. Yep. We had heard horror stories about...
Because I had heard from Tim and Carrie that they eyeball the group,
every group
as they, get, as they come towards them.
We did a lot of walking in this tour, a lot of walking.
And they were pleased to see that we were okay. Because they said they'll get people who are like, oh yeah, we're great. We walk because they warn you. You're going to walk 20,000 steps a day.
Yeah.
And they'll get people who can't, they're in a cart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we did have great tour guides. The one, Patient Zero was a little uptight, and he did give us some bad information about the chapel. But he was just the chapel being opened. But other than that, it was great, except for when we got down to the Globe Theater. Now, we were broken up in four separate groups, and each group was going to go in and do a workshop, an acting workshop, with a Shakespearean actor. And we had this guy, and immediately he gets us in a little room there, and Laura, it was your group and my group.
Okay, so one thing that illustrated how bad he was from the very beginning is we actually sat in a little deck area at the Globe. Someone, I don't know who, took another group, took our picture from across the Globe, and you could zoom in and see every person's expression.
Right.
30 of us, maybe less than 30, to a person.
Yeah.
We all looked miserable.
Right.
You looked miserable. I looked miserable. Yeah. And we had just gotten with this guy, and he was doing...
Right. Half the group wasn't even looking at him. They zoomed in on me and resent it to the group chat.
I know,
chat.
But I was behind you, and I looked just as miserable.
Don't give a tour and start asking questions when you're the guide. How about you not do that?
It was bad.
Why is this around?
And then he kept saying, was his favorite thing, Andrew, was are you guys tired? Did you just get off the plane? Why are you guys so tired?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, because you're terrible.
You're awful. And we got inside the room there, and then when it was time to do our little acting, well, first of all, anytime anybody did, if you weren't standing, MC was in the back, and she's a dancer, she was doing a little stretch. She was just doing nothing that was taking up a lot of motion, even. It was just kind of a little hip flexor stretch. And he literally stopped in the middle of his speech and said, can we save the stretching for later? Can we save the stretch?" I was like, she looked at him, and we all looked at him whoa, are you serious?
We didn't
here?
Like him from the beginning. These are good kids.
Yeah.
And how much were you looking forward to the Globe Theater experience?
A lot. Yeah,
absolutely. Everybody was really looking forward to this. And then...
Yeah.
And then
it had been a highlight. They were really excited about it.
He broke us into acting partners, and I had Jade.
We broke ourselves into a great student, Jade.
She's head of costumes, and Jade and I were reading from this script, and everybody was reading with their partner. A couple of people volunteered, and then at the very end, he's like, "All right, who wants to read the script one last time for everybody?" And nobody raises their hand. Well, then Jade raises her hand, and she's like, "We'll do it." And immediately,
I don't know why you guys did that. You, as a theater teacher, I thought should have been like, no, no, and then just
pick
somebody.
Well, I did, but then everybody was like, no, because he said, well, I don't like to have teachers do it. And then everybody was like, well, Dave's not really a teacher.
Yeah, but Jade isn't an actor.
Jade's not even an actress.
She's the head of costumes.
She's in our stagecraft class. So we get up there, and now I start doing my best. I mean, I am hamming it up, man. I am gesticulating. I am flopping all over the place. I'm going nuts. Well, I'm trying to play it for laughs.
So hang on. Are you trying to do iambic pentameter?
It is. Oh, yeah. It's Shakespearean. Yeah. It's an iambic pentameter. But I'm just trying to get laughs. And kids were laughing. But everybody was looking over at this guy. I found out
later. And me.
Oh, and you, really?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All my slaties were looking at me.
What was your reaction?
I was
rolling. I'm sure I've had your head in your hands.
Is there any video of this?
This guy, no. This guy, I'm sure he would have screamed and yelled and thrown the phone across the room. This guy apparently had a horrified look on his face.
Honestly, Andrew, it was a little bit horrifying, but I didn't feel that bad because this guy was so terrible.
He deserved it.
Yeah. He deserved it.
Did he comment that William Shakespeare was turning over in his grave?
No, he literally said, well, that's the last time I'll do that at the very end. But the kids came up to me afterwards. They're like, I am so sorry that guy was so rude to you. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, but you were crazy.
Well,
like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to have a little fun, for goodness sakes.
So here you are in the Globe Theater. Are you on the stage?
No, we were in a little room.
But still.
Right next to it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dave was not going to waste that opportunity.
No, of course not.
It's true.
Now, speaking of Tim and Carrie, our guides, I got to do share this. One thing that Carrie came up to me and shared at one point, because they were constantly being amazed by some of the things that our kids were saying. And she said, Dave, I got to tell you this. So, and then I'm not going to say the name of the kid, but she's like, so-and-so came up to me, and I don't know what to think of this. She said this to me, and Carrie said, I went up to her, and I said, are you having a good time? And this is what, and I had to write it down. As soon as she told me, I said, you got to tell me that again so I can write it down, and I'm going to quote you. And this is what our kid, for me, looked at Carrie right in the eyes and said this, I don't know. I'm working on channeling through my subconscious right now.
What?
I'm not in my conscious mind.
What?
That's what she said. Yeah. That's exactly. And Carrie was like, she looked at her and said, all right. And then just walked
away. That's funny. Any other kid, it might have been a joke, but I know this person.
Right, no, you know this kid.
That was meant seriously.
No, it was 100% serious.
That's really funny.
And I think his response to that was the correct response.
Yeah, walk away.
Yeah, walk away.
Yeah.
Her response, Carrie. Mm. Yeah. And then I come to find out later that this is the same kid who was sending out hints about not wanting to, was asking questions about, because when we went to the Globe Theater to see the performance, we were in the pit. So you stand.
We were groundlings.
Like, we were the groundlings, and you stand for the whole performance.
Honestly.
Just like back in the day.
What I would say, I think that's the better way to see a play at the Globe.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Because you're right up
close.
It's
very much an audience participation
thing. It hurt my
legs,
but it wouldn't have hurt if I hadn't been doing all the walking the days before.
Now, the weird thing is the stands were packed with British school kids, all in uniform, all wearing...
Andrew, was like we were... The Americans and they started to throw things at
us. Dumping water down from the balcony on us.
And they had to send like palace guards up to protect the Americans down.
They had a security guard for each section. So I think they were used to these British school kids.
So what was the deal with them? You know, attacking the Americans.
I don't know. We don't know. We were all obviously in regular clothes. Clearly,
we were very loud. We were very American.
Yeah, we were American.
Is the other
but,
thing.
No,
I would
but
say.
These British kids were horrifically behaved. I kept watching it. They were doing a running take to the bathroom the whole time.
Some of them had very strict school teachers with them. Out of central casting.
Got a picture of one.
And then others didn't.
As Amelia pretended to take a selfie of me and her, and she zoomed in on this guy, and then we sent it out to the group chat. And it was very interesting.
Now, did these British kids get to watch your performance?
No,
that would have been interesting to see their reaction.
But so this one kid who was not in her conscious mind, who was channeling her subconscious, well, subconsciously, she didn't want to stand the whole time.
No,
but
a lot
she was
of
asking
kids didn't.
Questions. Then all of a sudden, oh, Dave, I'm not feeling too well as soon as it started. Mm-hmm. And she was taken out. And Yeah, come on, give me a break.
Quite a few people decide, not a few, actually just a couple, decided they weren't feeling too
now,
well.
Now, yeah. I worked overseas, and I got to tell you, the English, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not saying the British, but the English in particular have got a lot of issues as people.
No, oh, really?
Like for businesses, for example, like, what the English do
tell.
The we English are the
not,
best.
Hold on, let's put out this caveat. We
Andrew
did not
Dad.
Find that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
no.
I'm who's just saying a, that is.
Okay.
And so now the
Dad. Tim, you hear that? That's
the English are great storytellers.
They are,
but also because mm-hmm. they're probably the best prevaricators in the world, right? I don't know if the two have a correlation, but I'm
perhaps we
I'm supposing that they it probably
I'm actually
probably
not going to deny that.
No,
or,
and
yeah.
I do always look forward yeah. when we have an author who's British. I always
they
look
are.
I get a little extra
shitty
up in my step when I get to talk to.
They're
a
British sharp,
author.
But I don't mean that in necessarily a smart way. Yeah. But they're sharp. They can be
full
sharp.
Full of a lot of things. They're,
yeah,
they do have a lot of yeah. Pontificating in them. That's okay. You make a yeah. you make a good point.
That's true.
You make a good point. Now, one thing that did get old for me real quick because Deb, the other theater teacher, mysteriously couldn't make it. No, not mysteriously. She got sick. As I was the guy in charge. Now, right there on the thing, I had to carry all the paperwork through the airport. I'm the one. So anytime any little thing went wrong, one time. And one, this kid came up to me and she's like, "Dave, I got a problem with my roommate." And I had a lot of that going on. All right, yeah, yeah. What's going on? Talk yeah. to me. Let's talk. She set her alarm for 30 minutes before running club. And this was a girl who was not going to running club. It woke up the whole room.
What is she supposed to do?
I'm like, all right, what's the problem there? We had running club every day. You know, she wanted yeah. to get up. It's a great thing. She can set her alarm for 15 minutes before. You need to, she literally said, you need to have a talk with her.
I got to find out who yeah. this is after this.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Well, sometimes.
Good luck with college, lady.
Right.
So, well, I can say in my household is when people don't get sleep,
yeah,
they get grouchy.
They get mean.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, I mean, if this is somebody that was sleep deprived.
They all were sleep deprived.
No, no, we were all
yeah, yeah. So it's, yeah. you know. It has an effect.
The thing is,
yeah, but that's
when
that
you're
was
sleep
a little
deprived.
Ridiculous.
I mean, you know, you gotta recognize certain things that,
right?
You know,
so I had a lot of that little minor stuff. Right now, this was a little major issue I had. So one of our last nights there, we were sitting down for dinner at a restaurant. All the kids were there, you know, and I was sitting right now. I had Principal Walker right next to me, and we were chatting. And Laura was there, and Dean Anderson was right there at our table. All of a sudden. Getting right.
Every night we sat with them.
That's what we have. Every night we did. Yeah. yeah. So I'm digging into my overcooked chicken. I don't know what that meal was.
I can't even remember that meal.
It was the fried chicken cutlet. It was.
Oh,
it was.
It was.
Awful. It was terrible. So I'm digging into this, trying and washing it down with Coke, taking like two sips of Coke for every little bite.
It was not good. I will agree with you on that
terrible.
One.
Terrible.
Yeah. It was a cute place, though.
It was a nice place. Well,
it's
then,
called the Black Swan, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think it was. There's probably a million black swans.
I think so. Yeah, I think there are. I saw a couple when we were out there. A
lot of swan shtick on this, as I was telling yeah. Tim this morning. Yeah. He came, he fried. He jumped in the pot, he fried. Right. All right, that was a little inside joke just for Tim. Anyway, so I'm sitting there eating, and all of a sudden, these girls come rushing up to our table and said, Dave, you're needed in the ladies' room right now. And I got it. All I'm thinking of, I'm the one in charge. Never mind. The principal's right here. There's a dean right here. We're not in school anymore.
A now, female principal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm the one in charge. The guy with the two thumbs.
What did you think it might have been?
I didn't even have a second.
Oh,
to
you
think
just
about
got up
it.
And
I
responded.
Just got up.
First responder.
First
Dave,
responder.
The first responder medicus.
And here's the thing. We go right over to the ladies' room. I forget. That we're not the only ones at this restaurant. So I see three or four of our kids lined up at the door while I push open the door. And there's like one stall, and then there's a woman who I don't recognize staring at me like, what the hell is this guy doing? Wow. And then, but then out of my other eye, I see our poor kid who is throwing up into the sink. And what the kids are telling me that she has having an allergic reaction. Now we had, I can't tell you how many, we went to that Thai restaurant. Everybody all of a sudden had a nut allergy and they're all like, oh, my throat's closing up. Oh, I can't breathe. It's in the air. I can't breathe. How many kids were complaining?
No, no. About it was an Indian restaurant.
Oh, Indian
restaurant. And ironically, they didn't actually serve any nuts at that Indian restaurant.
They didn't serve any nuts. And yet everybody was having an allergic reaction.
They didn't cook with nuts at that particular Indian restaurant.
How about the open market where someone sent out a group message to the chat. Does anybody have an EpiPen? Because deathly allergic to nuts. Anytime we turned around.
If you're deathly allergic to nuts, you need to have an EpiPen on you.
Yeah. No, you don't need to have just one on you.
Multiple. Right.
You need to have multiple
along with Benadryl. Yeah. There's a lot of people, too, that didn't seem to take Benadryl with them.
I don't understand.
I'm sending Sylvia to Europe. She has a few allergies, nothing at all like what I encountered with the East kids.
Well, luckily...
I'm sending her with Benadryl, though.
Yeah, so this kid had a flower allergy, not F-L-O-U-R, but F-L-O-W-E-R, and I guess a garnish on the dessert was made out of...
ice cream.
And she, an ice cream, and she bit it. She pulled out a stem out of her mouth, and she was like, uh-oh. But she was fine. She was great. She gave me the thumbs up, and I gave her
It was almost the second night in a row that this girl had had to take Benadryl. So the first night she had to take Benadryl, she has a pistachio allergy. Oh, she didn't list it on the thing because she's like, I'm not going to encounter any pistachios. At the Indian restaurant, I guess they did have nuts.
Yeah.
They served pistachio.
They didn't serve peanuts.
Ice
cream.
They had pistachio yogurt.
Right.
Which was delicious, actually. Really, really good. But pistachio. Yeah. And so I sat next to her at the Mousetrap, that play that night, and she was, on Benadryl, and there was a lot of swaying in the seat of like, I don't know if she's going to make it. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That was, I dealt with her, went back to my seat, and that was when there was a group message. That one girl, the girl who didn't have the EpiPen, who was deathly allergic, though, sending out a message. She turned our group chat into her own personal Craigslist. Like, who wants to buy these shoes?
I'm going to
put these shoes for sale.
They had a little bidding war. This was someone, though, who had lost her cell phone.
She left her cell phone.
And so she knew she'd have to pay for her new cell phone when she got back to the States.
On the Uber.
So she immediately started selling things.
She told me at one point that, I'm not leaving this country. At the airport, she said, I'm not leaving this country without my phone. I said, think again, because you are, because I'm not staying here with you. And there's the girl whose passport got torn, and we were in the airport sweating it out through security for about half an hour. They're studying her passport, calling TSA, calling people from the embassy over, looking at her passport.
Where was it torn, Dave?
Right through one of the numbers. So it was torn anywhere else. It was torn right through the same kid who was on the bus ready to leave for the airport when I made the announcement, does everybody have their passport? And we had to run up to her room because she was about to leave in her room. Yes, it was torn, and they didn't want to let her on the airplane. They were like, or you can go now to the embassy, and they'll give you a new one. And she's like, great, because I have to go to Costa Rica in 2 weeks. And I looked at her, and I said, we are not going to the embassy. That plane is leaving in 2 hours, and we are on it. So she wasn't happy with me, but I was not sticking around there for another couple of days with her. Or with anybody, for that matter.
Yeah.
Now, we just got new passports for our kids. Mm-hmm.
They're nice. The new ones you can't tear.
Well, and I don't know. I'm not going to try and
destroy it. No, you can't.
Destroy it.
You'll see it. It's like a credit card. I guess you could cut it.
And so, in any case, it took probably 4 months or so for us to get them. And now there's been articles recently saying the wait for new passports is up to 7 months.
Mm, yeah.
Dave had to reapply twice.
Well, this girl came back and she got, maybe because she just had it, but she immediately made an appointment. She has a new passport now.
She paid.
It took her
a
week. I'm sure she paid
it
extra.
Yeah.
But she now has a new passport.
Yeah.
Now, Laura, I know you had a hard time staying hydrated over there in England.
My
you
gosh.
Want to talk about that a little
bit? Yeah. So, in Colorado, it's very dry. Mm-hmm. Incredibly dry.
Dry climate.
We're also high desert climate, basically.
Well, a lot of people are high out there.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. I am not high, but it's a high
altitude.
High altitude, which I think also dehydrates you. And because of the high altitude, we have crazy extremes in temperature, which I also find a little dehydrating because it'll be
swings.
83 today, and then it could even go down by 40. Sometimes it drops 60. like it's a desert.
Big
it,
swings.
It drops. Yep. Yeah, high plain, really. So, and I'm used to drinking a lot of water. I like drinking a lot of water. In England, there were no like drinking fountains. Anywhere.
No drinking fountains anywhere. Anywhere. As I found out when I ran.
And so I finally, I don't like buying plastic water bottles. Like I'm opposed to it. Yeah. I try really hard not to. And it finally, sunk into me. Like on the couple last days we were there, like I'm just going to have to break down, start buying plastic water bottles.
Yeah.
Nowhere. What else to
do. Nowhere.
Mm-mm. Also, Andrew, I'm sure you know this from your time, but I was still surprised at how many smokers there are in Europe.
Yeah.
So many cigarette smokers.
The weed smokers here in Colorado and the cigarette smokers there in Europe.
About equal.
I think I've told the story before, but the last time I was on a smoking flight was in Europe. I was traveling from Germany to Spain.
Oh, yeah.
And little did I know that there were still smoking sections.
Wow.
Now, this was, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably more than that.
But even then, it was like unbelievable because there's nothing like being stuck in a can with a bunch of nervous smokers.
I know. I had one funny story. So I'm walking with the kids down the sidewalk, as we just did constantly.
We're just walking
down the sidewalk. This beautiful young blonde woman, impeccably dressed in London. She steps out and she's got like designer clothes, handbag, shoes, like she's gorgeous.
Mm.
And she stops, lights up a cigarette, and I literally hear as we're passing her from the girls around me, "Aw."
That's funny.
Yeah, because it was gross. She turned into like, "Ooh, yeah." So that was kind of cute.
Yep. Well, I think that. One last thing. You were the keeper of the Band-Aids on the trip. Also,
I did have a pack of Band-Aids with me. That. Yeah. And so almost every morning, Brandon would. Take off his shoe, take off his sock at the tube station.
Lovely.
Or wherever we were.
Oh, good. Right
outdoors.
In public. Yeah, out in public.
Oh, always in public. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And have to get the Band-Aid applied.
Yeah.
Yeah. Classic. And then multiple kids needed Band-Aids. But, I mean, that's,
Yep.
That's what you're there for.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, all in all, a fantastic trip.
It was a great trip.
It really was a great trip. And we're looking forward to taking another one with the kids.
I had dreams the night we landed. I went to sleep that night. I had really a nightmare of me counting my girls in my chaperone group over and over again.
Yep.
And I couldn't figure out who was missing, but I knew there was at least two girls missing and I was panicked and trying to find them. And that tells you like how it gets into your subconscious I can't let anyone go missing.
Right.
I'm in charge of them.
And Laura, that's termed a nightmare.
Thank you.
It's not a dream.
not a dream.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
And today during fourth period when they have the announcements, they always start out with a song. Well, guess what song hit the announcements?
Oh, which one?
All the Single Ladies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I had some of your Single Sladies in the class and I got very excited. So I'd say,
awesome.
All the Single Sladies.
Oh, my
slay
gosh.
Slay one, slay two.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That is fun.
So Andrew? That's what we've been up to. Andrew, how have you been?
We were in Cabo at a 5-star resort.
Mm.
Enjoying it. And we went there last year. And, and it is it's like a 5-star resort. The restaurants and the food is just absolutely amazing. I've had a lot of seafood, but I've had the best oyster of my life.
Mm.
And maybe I'll send you guys a picture and you can post it. But it is like an emerald green oyster, just unbelievable. And it's just one oyster, but it literally is the best single oyster I've had in my entire life.
From the prices that I saw, I hope that it was.
Yeah, and so I sent a price of some
was that a real
appetizers.
Price list?
It was a real price list, but they
something
were in Mexican
off.
Pesos.
That was pesos.
Yeah.
We thought we saw a dollar. We were very confused and concerned
right.
that a salad would be...
$225.
Yeah.
Mexico... And I think it was more like $400.
It was $400. Yeah.
But Mexico used the dollar sign for the pesos.
I didn't know that. I did not remember.
Yeah, and
that.
It's confusing.
It is confusing.
You could divide those numbers by 18, and that will give you the real number.
Okay.
And the thing is, we don't actually have to pay that because it's all inclusive. It's all included.
Oh.
In terms
you've already
of,
paid for it.
In terms of what you say. But I know.
Yeah, so you like, have paid for it.
Looking at appetizers.
He likes to say, well, we've already, it's already, we didn't pay for it.
You've already paid for it.
Oh, no, we've paid. And like we've got to have two rooms for our kids.
Yeah, I can see that.
But it's a great resort. Now, I will say there was one interesting thing this trip, is there were a group of 100 people,
mm-hmm.
From this resort. And it's it's like a medium-sized resort. But it was 100 people that traveled together to this resort. Now, they were from New York. They were New Yorkers. Mm-hmm. And, you know...
Nothing wrong with New Yorkers.
They just took... They took over this place.
I bet they did.
Now, there was one guy memorable... Because he looked a little bit like Joe Pesci.
Wow.
And let's just say the...
A lot of holes in that desert.
And the similarities to Joe Pesci, the guy was short. He was obnoxious.
All right. Well, let's not call Joe Pesci. You calling Joe Pesci obnoxious?
Yes, I am. Yes, Joe, if you're listening.
Yes, he is.
Obnoxious. At least in your role. I mean, that's just the role.
Some of his roles.
Yeah. So anyways, and maybe this group out of New York, they were not very refined.
Sure.
And this Joe Pesci-type character was basically telling the young kids, look, kids, you don't take no for an answer. You don't take no from anybody.
Whoa.
Now,
hey, this is our place here, and we gonna run this place.
And that's pretty
They're
much
working
what
for
it
us.
Was. Mm. And so...
Wow.
And so then it was also overheard that these families also had... And this was like one big family, right?
Wow.
They were all related somehow or another.
Was it a family?
I don't know. And so they were overheard basically saying, look, you got these nannies to watch over you.
Oh.
You can ask anything from them. They should be waiting on you hand and foot.
Wow.
And they may have even used the S word to refer to these people. So
what kind of people are they
raising? I said, and that's just it. And so a couple more anecdotes is...
And they have money, clearly.
Well, somehow, and that's the question. You would look at... this group and think, how can they afford to be here?
That's what I'm wondering.
Right? But somehow, they could afford to be there. Right?
Huh.
Now...
Well, rich people are a-holes too.
Yeah,
they are, but they're usually hide it. They hide it better.
Yeah, and so then...
It's hard to figure out what type of a-hole they are
at
first glance.
There was nobody in this entire group that had any refinement.
No,
right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like super fine, but just even manners.
Yeah.
And so then, and a couple anecdotes is there were a lot of nannies that quit. And then we heard the rumbling of, you know...
Because they're teaching the kids to treat them like crap.
Oh, and, that's just, and these nannies worked, I will tell you, they worked from 7 a.m. and then 7 o'clock or later when we're eating dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're working 12 hours a day in the heat, taking care of these kids like night and day. And these kids
Are they just locals? Bratty. Are they locals that work for the resort?
Oh. Yeah.
And these kids were screaming. Mm. They were whiny. Mm.
Oh.
I mean...
That's terrible.
It was unbelievable. Now, the other anecdote I'll tell you is you've got to go down.
Some of the nannies quit?
Oh, yeah, they quit.
I love that.
Yeah, so we loved it. And some of the other people that were there, we were talking about it. Man, mm-hmm. it's great, except for this group of people.
Mm.
And they all had
Are
stories.
Are you sure they're from New York and not New Jersey, out of curiosity?
Yeah, it could have been Jersey.
I think the general understanding was that they were from New York.
Okay.
Right? It could have been the Bronx or something like that. Whether that's really considered New York or not, I don't know.
Yeah. It's all New York.
It's all New York.
So in any case, the other story is we had to go out and reserve chairs by the pools. There was three pools. And this family was so big, they took over one of the three pools, right? It just took it over. And they took over most of the other one too.
Wow.
Right? And the other pool's adults only, so they really weren't down there because
they had a lot of kids. Huh.
And so in the mornings, I would get up, work out. I would go down and I would reserve a chairs to get a nice spot. And I would sit there. Well, these kids were basically coming up, going through people's bags and stuff that they had left on the chairs.
What?
With you know, absolutely no...
hey, free money. Hey, look what's got here. Hey, there's a hair dryer in here. Look what I got.
Oh,
a change purse.
With absolutely no concern whatsoever.
Whoa.
Basically going through the chairs. And I knew it's like, there's no point in saying anything to these kids.
No.
You know?
You can't say anything to kids like that.
Question. Were the men, okay, I'm wondering about the male-female. Were the women like Marissa Tomei?
And my cousin Vinny,
and the guys were unattractive? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I would say...
Was there a disparity?
I would say it was more like, what's that show, Jersey something or other?
Jersey Shore.
I would say...
Trashy Jersey, probably.
Something, and I wouldn't use the T word.
Oh, really?
I might be thinking it.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say it.
I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
Since I have
not
seen
them. It sounds pretty trashy to me.
And a lot of these guys look...
Honestly, Andrew, this seems Jersey.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of these guys seem like they were ready to throw down.
That's Jersey.
I'm surprised. It was definitely Jersey. I'm surprised I didn't see any fights.
That's Jersey.
Yeah,
that's Jersey.
Between this group.
Where did the money come from?
And that's what, like, we're wondering, because, you know, I mean, each of these families has got to be spending tens of thousands of dollars to be there.
Lotto winners?
I mean, well, even if you add the money up, so you're talking, let's say, $20,000 a family.
Hmm.
There's basically at least 25 families there.
Wow.
Mm.
Right?
They have serious money.
Yeah, so that's at least $500,000, right? For that, is that right? 20,000 times 25,000, half a million? Is that the right math?
400,000, 400 and some thousand, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but, you know, still a great trip, but, you know, I'm wondering the next time we travel if we can say, is there a group of like 100 people?
Can we avoid
traveling?
The Gambino
we
crime
don't
family,
want
please?
The crime families yeah. involved. All right. Well, welcome
Here's
back.
Another question, though.
Yeah.
Do you think real life crime families, do they act like that in public?
You know, it's hard to say.
It is hard to say.
It's hard to say. I would almost think they'd be better behaved.
I feel like they would
than this,
too.
Than these.
Because you
group.
Don't necessarily yeah. want to draw attention.
Yeah.
You don't want the attention.
Not that yeah. type of attention, anyway. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you who does deserve a little attention. That is Dana Stabenow. Her new book out now, Not the Ones Dead, is the name of the book. I love this series, and the latest one in this one is no exception. Once again, we are in the park in Alaska, and nobody writes about Alaska better than the native daughter, Dana Stabenow. What I also like about this series is not just the way she writes about the physical setting of Alaska. I'm ready to take a trip up there right now.
Me too.
But the people as well, the natives, the politics that are involved, the locals, the lifestyle. In this book, there is a mid-air collision between two small aircrafts that leave 10 people dead, but 11 bodies are found in the wreckage. What is going on? It's up to Kate to find out. As always, her trusty dog, Mutt, steals the show. There's another fun entry in the Kate Shugak series. And also features Dana's trademark snarky wit and deft characterizations. Always a delight talking to her. Laura and I had a wonderful chat with her. And here it is for you right now.
I'm in Homer, Alaska. That's where I live. Smart. I'm in my office. Oh, yeah, and your timing is great. Take a look at this. My desk broke.
So oh, no.
I got it propped up there. Oh,
it really broke.
Thing. Yeah. So, anyway, the guys who built me my desk are going to come fix it sometime this month. So, in the meantime, I've kind of switched around.
Wow.
Oh, that's funny.
Your timing is great.
I guess okay, that was dramatic. Timing. Yeah.
Well, the desk's kind of important to writers. What can just I say? Like,
a little bit.
It's right up there.
I just stood up and it fell down. And, you know, I mean, that it definitely got my attention. And I lost concentration on the book I'm working on.
Definitely. Oh, no.
I hope that's not a. That's not a new desk. I'm guessing it's got a couple of years.
No, actually, I went and I counted. I'm friends with the guys who built the desk.
Oh,
and so I went and I looked on my shelf and I looked in my accounts to see when I bought that when I paid them to build the desk.
Yeah.
And I went and I looked on my shelf and I counted all the books that I have written.
Wow.
At this desk. So I'm going to leave them. Don't tell them. I'm going to leave them a note when they come to fix the desk saying I written 12 books were written on this desk. I expect you to fix it so that 12 more.
12
can be
more need to be written.
No pressure.
That's
it's
nice.
All on you.
Do you put a, do you do a lot of like hammering on the keys? Like, what are you doing to that desk? How is it
my
getting?
Key? No, that's not my fault. All right. Since you called me on it, I do occasionally hammer on the key.
Sure, yeah.
I was typing so hard that the E key popped off. Boink,
wow.
You know, it's not easy to get, it's not convenient to buy a new keyboard or laptop or e-key for that matter when you live in Homer, Alaska. So, it was another really sinus clearing event.
Yeah, we talked to Jeffrey Deaver. He says that he has to buy a new keyboard after every novel. I don't know. He like abuses that thing every time he writes a book.
Love, Jeff. Separated birth.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Dana, listen, thank you so much for joining us. Absolutely loved your new book, Not the Ones Dead. Not the Ones Dead. Now, listen, this is a tale of microaggression, bacon waffles, and the lazy way to skin a salmon. Goodness gracious, Dana, what was it that inspired you to write this latest chapter?
I can't say that I fully realized the inspiration, but this is what kickstarted it. Yes. I was weeding in my garden, and I heard this whirring sound, and I couldn't figure out what it was. It was a sound I was unaccustomed to hearing.
Right.
So I'm looking around. I finally look up, and it's a drone hanging over my head. Somebody is like surveilling my property with a drone. I have no idea who. Nobody came up and apologized afterwards. So, you know, I'm thinking it was just like a nosy neighbor or somebody who drove down the road and decided to launch a drone. And I don't know. I don't know what's intrinsically interesting about me weeding in my garden. Anyway, and I was really annoyed, and it hung there for a while, long enough for me to think I could go get my gun and shoot it.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally thought that. And then I thought, I live, you know, in the flight path. I mean, everybody in Alaska lives in a flight path. I mean, there's planes going overhead all the time. And I thought, God, I could miss the drone, which I inevitably would, I promise you. And I could hit a plane. I could actually kill somebody. Mm. And then I thought, oh.
Yes.
I love you, writers. That's exactly. Great. The rest of us are just like, man, that drone's so annoying.
And you ruin
and then
your
we move
day.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oops.
Yeah.
Do you get excited when that happens?
You know, after thinking about it, talking about it with you guys, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that could happen. I mean, it could.
Yeah, it definitely could.
Right. Anyway, the story evolved from there. That isn't what happens in the novel, but that was the lightning rod that started me down. Because I've written, this is the 23rd Kate Chugach novel, and I have sworn a mighty oath not to write another Kate Chugach novel unless and until I have a really good plot to hang it on. Because we all know writers who should have ended series. We all know writers whose characters went stale because they were bored with them.
Right.
And I've always been terrified that would happen to me. So it was kind of fun to have this inspiration and then decide, okay, there's a Kate Chugach novel.
That's cool. I like that. Yeah. Drones are, I've had one over our property. And it seems like it's just watching you.
Because it's unsettling.
It kind of hangs over for you a little bit and you can't figure out where it is, who it's coming from. Legally, the rules are vague.
You don't know. Yeah. You don't know one, do you?
Well, they're still trying to figure them out.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm pretty sure that the U.S. military doesn't want a whole lot of rules. So I'm pretty sure ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association, absolutely does want a lot of rules.
Yeah.
So I think the more the better. Frankly, I'm on their side.
Yeah.
Do you have a drone? Do you own a drone?
No, I don't own a drone.
Just hang on.
I actually bought a really, really cheap drone for a friend, but he doesn't live in the state.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. We've got to keep him out of Alaska. That's true. All right.
That's really interesting.
There is a law. There is a law in Alaska that says you can't hunt with a drone.
Right. Okay. So that is true.
It's sort of an addendum to the law that says you can't fly and shoot in the same day. You got to land your plane. You got to stay overnight, and then you have to go find the off in the air. So it's basically that, you know, fair hunt kind of a thing.
That's so interesting. I never thought about someone using them to hunt with, but
Oh, in Alaska, if you can imagine it, and if the technology is there, I promise you they'll do it.
That's really funny.
So you talk about keeping a series fresh, and you mentioned this is book 23 in this, or as I like to call it, book Michael Jordan in the series. Michael Jordan did wear number 23. We have some, but you do keep things fresh. We have new characters. Some characters are gone without giving anything away. There's a surprising twist at every turn. Is this, you talk about always wanting to have a good plot to hang the book on. Are you always also thinking about just the characters and what you're going to do to them to keep it fresh?
The way I start every book is with the setting. And in this case, that's the park.
Yeah.
And I figure out who lives there and then I figure out what trouble they're going to get up to. But just after the drone incident in my yard, I read a book by Simon Winchester called Land. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. And he's basically talking about, you know, land down through the ages and who owns it and and he wrote a story about a couple of billionaire brothers who have bought up a lot of Western Montana and Eastern Idaho. And, you know, Alaska's a hell of a lot bigger than Idaho.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, that that, and I had previously talked to an FBI agent who told me that, this was years ago, he told me that they were really worried about white supremacy in activity. And there was four states, it was Alaska, Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana.
Yeah.
And dumb me, you know, I mean, I don't learn this stuff until somebody like him says something like that to me. Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. So it seemed like a natural progression of things that I would think about these two billionaire brothers. And I would think to myself, what if they tried to pull that off in Alaska? What if they tried to pull it off in Kate's Park? Mm-hmm. So they're in part the new characters in this book. And, you know, you can't stop people from coming and you can't stop people from buying land, especially, you know, if it's private property.
Yeah.
You know, you can't control those sales. So it's whoever shows up with, you know, a checkbook that gets to move in. And then what effect do they have on the community?
Yeah.
The two billionaire brothers in Washington, Idaho are having a serious effect on the community.
They really are. Yeah. You are absolutely right. Idaho, in particular, has been in the news, you know, the banning of books in their libraries and all kinds of stuff up there. Yeah, yeah. I'm so far in Colorado because we do have a wingnut, Lauren Boebert. Don't know if you've heard of her.
Oh, sure. Boebert. Yeah,
I think I've heard of her.
We're not in her territory, but yeah.
And I have a friend. I have friends who live in Colorado, so I'm kept up to date.
Yeah, because who wouldn't want to be kept up to date with that whack job?
So you have a lot of COVID talk in this book. I just took a COVID test, COVID-free.
Literally just took one this
but
morning.
Just checking. Right. Yep. Were small towns in Alaska hit especially hard by COVID?
It depends on what town you were in. Mm. And it depends a lot on the political bent of that town. And Homer is a pretty blue town. As if you stay inside the Homer city limit, it's pretty red. It's pretty red outside. And if you go 80 miles up the road to Kenai and Sultana, they're an oil town. They're all about Republican.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I buy filter salt for my water filter. I drive up 80 miles up the road to Kenai where they have a Home Depot. So I can get bags of 40-pound bags of salt for my water filter. And in the middle of COVID, I ran out of filter salt and there was nothing for it, but I had to drive to Kenai. So I get to Kenai, I get to Home Depot, I walk inside and I'm the only person with a mask on.
What a weird
and
feeling.
And their numbers, of course, were much higher than ours.
Yeah.
But, you know, numbers are higher everywhere. And I was really, I was really conflicted about whether to write COVID into the books at all, except in passing. And I mean, I went back and forth on it. I was write a little bit one way and I'd write a little bit another. And so I finally went on my, went on the Dana Maniacs page.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a bunch of really great, I have the best fans.
Shout out to the Dana Maniacs. Really smart and really funny.
So I went and I posted to the page and I told them what my dilemma was. And I said, what do you think? And they were pretty evenly divided about whether or not to write it in, whether or not to represent reality, whether or not just to ignore it at all. Some of them said, oh God, I already lived through that once. And then I thought, you know, then I looked at when the book was going to come out, 2023. And I thought to myself, okay, I think I can probably write about this mostly from the rearview mirror, which is basically, fortunately, right where we are right now. Not completely. COVID's never going to go away. No. I don't think. All of my friends in medicine say it isn't. So it's going to be an ongoing reality. But I just didn't want to write about it in the moment. I just didn't. It was like a 9/11 thing.
It was so damn depressing.
I think probably what was more depressing than, I mean, quite apart from the fact that the disease itself is scary as hell and the park in this book, you know, you look backwards and one of the precipitating events is the death of one of the previous characters from COVID, which is what precipitates everything in this book. And it's difficult.
Well, and so it's not good.
The Dany Maniacs, you know, I took what they said and I made my decision and I think it turned out okay.
I think so. Because it isn't going anywhere.
No, I don't mind reading about it at all anymore. Right. At first I was like, I wouldn't want to, but that would be 2021, 2020. But now it's like,
we're in the middle of it right now as I'm getting texts from, you know, five or six kids who came back and are now positive for COVID.
It's a normal thing.
It's not just the fact that you went to England, right?
Right.
It's that you were on those long plane rides there and back.
Exactly.
You know, you're all closeted in that space. I don't care what they say about those HEPA filters. You're all breathing each other's air.
Oh, yeah. Every single person on that plane, Dana, I am here to tell you how to cough also.
Oh, yeah. A lot of coughing.
It was the worst to hear.
I came back from, I was researching the Eye of Isis novels, which is another series that I do. And I was coming back from Egypt and flying from Cairo to Frankfurt. And we had guides and we were, you know, there were only two times that we were in close proximity with a whole bunch of people. I got on the plane. The guy in back of me started coughing and I thought, oh no, please, no. This is before COVID. And by the time, guys, it was like a 6-hour flight, I think. And by the time I got to Frankfurt, I'm sitting there and a little tickle is starting in the back of my throat when we're waiting for the LA flight. Yeah. It's like, are you kidding me?
That's how it works.
You know, I think a lot of us maybe didn't make fun, but kind of thought that a lot of the Asian travelers that we saw when we traveled overseas wearing the mask, we thought maybe they were overdoing it.
Yeah.
No.
Turns out they were the smart ones.
No.
They were the smart ones all along.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, Dana, listen, let's talk a little humor. Now, listen, you always have plenty of humor in this book, a lot of snark. I do appreciate the snark. And I always chuckle. I always chuckle when I come across gems like this one. I just have to read this one back to you because I enjoyed it so much. It was, quote, a slab of meatloaf as thick as a Diana Gabaldon novel. Now, listen, that is just a sheer delight to read something like that.
She's a friend. She's actually a friend. And she told me one time, I couldn't believe this. She said to me, I envy you being able to tell a story in so few pages.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I've never forgotten that. So that's probably what inspired that line. If she doesn't contact me to ask me about it or, you know, laugh with me about it, I'm going to contact her and say, did you see what I did?
You got to do that. That was a great one.
Yeah.
That was a great one.
Big fan of Diana Gabaldon novels. That's for sure. Right? I know.
Yeah. But they're
I think Outlander is one of the perfect novels.
It is. It really is. Yeah. I've read
it. Even though there's stuff in there and you know what I'm talking about, that's pretty hard to fake.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. Now, listen, you do have some unkind words to say in this book about wealthy tourists who come up to Alaska seemingly.
No, really? What?
I'm just reading between the lines. I don't know. Maybe I could be reading too much into this, but when you're talking about them posting pics on Instagram just to show where they are, I don't know. I get a little hankering that you might be upset with them. Dana, what are your thoughts on these tourists who come up to Alaska just to post on Instagram? Is that a big problem up there? We have it out here in Colorado, too.
You know, I mean, we have tons of tourists. We have thousands of tourists.
Wow.
And many of them, I got to say, guys, many of them come to Alaska because they've read my book. And the reason I know this is because they tell me so when I bump into them at the Homer Farmers Market and Captain Patty's Fish House and Safeway.
Oh, wow.
And they tell me online as well. And they're all mostly great people, and I thoroughly enjoy them. But, of course, you're always going to pick out the few that are the most fun to write about. And I mean, all the best stories from the Homer bookstores are from the nutty tourists, not from the great ones who just come in, browse, buy books, and leave.
Right, of course, yeah.
So I'm exaggerating for effect there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you write about Alaska so beautifully. That's the one state I've been in, 49 states, have not been in Alaska, and we've got to get up there at some point.
Yeah.
It's like right up the air road. Come on. What's the matter with you?
I know.
There are direct flights.
Yeah, there probably are.
Easier to get to than England.
Yes. Dave and I both love maps and books, and you have multiple maps at the beginning of this book, which I love. Is that something... Do you draw those up before you start writing? Do you ever go back and change these maps? Is it something that your editor has someone that does for you? Like, is it something that changes, or is it something that just helps you as a writer?
One of the Dana Maniacs is named Dr. Sherry Northen.
Okay.
And she's a cartographer.
Oh.
She is I think I met her on the Dana Maniacs page. I'm not sure.
Wow.
I think so. Anyway, and so I said, hi, what do you do? And she said, a map maker. And I said, DM me right now.
Wow.
That's
she's
awesome.
She's been making maps for me ever since. I personally, I'm like you guys. I love a good map.
Yeah.
Particularly with fantasy novels.
Oh, I love fantasy
because,
maps.
I mean, you know, if you're writing about an imaginary place, I want a visual reference. And Alaska is so big that, you know, and I prefer to have the map in the book so that people can like page back and go, where is that?
Yeah.
And how long did it take them to get there and measure the miles, you know, from the scale to see really, is that, was that right? Did she get that right? Probably not. it's important to me. I really like maps. And yes, to answer your question, Florida, I do update the maps all the time. In fact, Sherry right now is updating the Eye of Isis maps for the next three books. Four books in the series.
Wow. That, now, do you ever get some of the, like, the originals framed and have them in your house? At, another curiosity?
Well, I'm looking up from the screen here to my blackboard, and basically what I do is print out the new maps on an 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper, and I thumbtack them to the bulletin board so I can,
you can reference.
When I'm sitting at my unbroken desk, see if I'm getting it right.
Oh, that's really funny.
Gotcha.
You also have everyone's favorite mutt, Mutt.
That's right.
You know, finds a way to steal the show and shine as the true star of this book. Do you have a mutt yourself?
I have never owned a dog.
Wow.
I can't tell you where, I mean, I've known many of them.
Yeah.
I have many favorites among the canine family. But she just, you know, in the writing of A Cold Day for Murder, the first Kate Chudiak novel, she just bounced out on scene and she's just taken over every scene she's in ever since.
Wow.
She is not a shy and retiring type.
No, she's not. Yeah.
And she's basically, she's Kate's sidekick, you know? Yeah.
She's a great
character. And I actually allowed myself to tell a little bit more of that story in this book.
Yeah, we get a little backstory. I like that. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
Interesting.
And, you know, it's your 23rd Kate book. So
Michael Jordan is the Michael Jordan
of, books, of the Kate books.
I have to ask. Is 23 Michael Jordan's number?
Yes, that's his number.
Okay, his jersey number. Okay, sorry.
When he was with the Bulls. Later on, when he came out of it, he wore number 45, but he's always going to be number 23 to us, for goodness sake.
Forgive me for being completely inept when it comes to sports.
He likes to talk.
I like to always bring it to sports. None of you writers understand what I'm talking about. A couple. Bob Dugoni, he's a big baseball fan, but we got there, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's really funny. Are you, 23rd, Michael Jordan of books. Mm-hmm. How real are your characters to you at this point? Like, I know they exist in your mind and all this, but are they also things, people that you almost think of fondly as like a family member?
They almost have lives of their own now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes I'll look back and think, God, I can't believe she said that.
Oh.
And then I'll think to myself, yes, but that came out of your head.
Yeah.
So wild.
It can be a little unnerving.
I bet.
I mean, I feel like at this point, I'm almost channeling them.
Yeah.
But they occupy their own world, Laura. They occupy their own world, not my world, their own world. So I don't really think of them as neighbors, but I do that, you know, I think of them as real. Absolutely.
I bet. And were you always, even from a young child, were you writing and creating characters and worlds within your head, or when did you start writing?
I thought I was going to be a journalist.
Oh, yeah.
My teachers right across the bay in Seldovia pushed me toward a career in journalism. It never occurred to any of us that I would become a novelist.
Wow.
So I went to college at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks and took a 4-year degree in journalism. And about 2.5 seconds after I got my degree, I realized I had no ability to ask the hard question, which is essential in journalism.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I went to work, you know, in the oil fields on the slope. The hell with it.
Oh, wow, you did.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah.
And then I was up there for 6 years, and then I went back. And then by then I knew I wanted to at least try to write fiction. Mm. And I went back to school and got a master's degree and, you know, took about, I think, 5 years to publish my first novel, 5 or 6, maybe 7. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. And then, you know, I never looked back.
Wow. Awesome. That's interesting.
And your next book, by the way, just so you can tuck this away, number 24 will be the Roger Clemens of the series.
Thank you for enlightening me. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
He's the first 24 that pops, and Dwight Evans also read.
We're good.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, Danny, you claim in the book that there are more small plane pilots in Alaska than anywhere else in the world. Is that true? I always think of course, Maggie O'Connell from
Northern Exposure.
Northern Exposure, as you know, a small plane.
We have a neighbor who was a bush pilot. He lives next door.
Bill lives next door.
He flies for Frontier Airlines right now.
He was a small plane pilot in Alaska. All right, are they just like taxi drivers up there? What's going on up in Alaska? Everybody's got to have a plane.
It's interesting that you should use the word taxi driver because where I grew up, Soldovia across the bay, doesn't have a regularly scheduled airplane. It has an air taxi.
Oh,
and there
wow.
are air taxis all over Alaska, and in particular in the YK Delta because there are so many small villages there.
Wow.
And if it's not frozen enough to use the river or unfrozen enough to use the river, either a boat or a sled, or for whatever reason, I mean, everybody flies. Everybody in Alaska flies. You got to fly to get here. I mean, you can drive, but by far fewer people drive up here than do fly. And I mean, God, just in my own family, two of my cousins are pilots. My best friend's a pilot. Her husband's a pilot. My father was a bush pilot. Wow. My grandfather was the chief of operations for Alaska Airlines back in the early 50s.
Wow.
Aviation runs strong in my family, but that doesn't make me unusual in Alaska by any means.
Wow. Have you ever considered getting your pilot's license?
I don't know. It's just not anything I was ever interested in.
Yeah.
It's kind of, if you let that bug get a hold of you, it will take all your time and all your money going forward. I mean, if you meet a brain surgeon in Alaska who is also a pilot, he will say to you, when you say, what do you do? He will say, I'm a pilot. Oh, yeah, I'm a brain surgeon. I mean, everything always comes second to being a pilot.
Sure.
That's how people introduce themselves.
Wow.
And it's just, that's our thing.
It's like being a sailor. Yeah.
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 And don't have a fear of flying if you live in Alaska and like to travel, I guess.
You can.
I mean, one of my other characters, in the Liam Campbell series, Liam is deathly afraid of flying. Oh. That was fun. And his main squeeze is a pilot too, so that's even more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
Interesting.
And he's a trooper in Alaska, which means he has to fly everywhere, which he's even more fun than that.
Oh, that's it. So the troopers in Alaska fly.
The troopers are always looking for a pilot.
Interesting.
For people who have pilot's licenses.
Huh.
And I think that they have a program now. I'd have to ask. I think they have a program now where they will actually pay for troopers to go and get a license.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. What an interesting place.
I follow the troopers on Facebook, and just recently I saw a post where they were welcoming new pilot.
Wow.
Put new pilots into the force. Yeah, it's some of the villages, something goes wrong out there. There's very few Alaska troopers. There's, last time I checked, I think it was like 235 or something like that.
Really?
And, if you lay a map of Alaska over the South 48, it crosses both borders and both coasts. It's a big place.
Wow.
And weather, always problematic.
I bet.
So, you can have something go wrong in your village and need a trooper there, and they won't get there for a week.
Wow.
That's barely possible. So, flying troopers, very important.
I bet. I see that. That's interesting. I never thought of that. Actually,
Now besides needing a desk to write on, do you have any other writing quirks that need to be in place as you said about your daily task of putting words to paper?
A desk, a laptop? I mean, really? Are you seriously?
I think he means quirks.
No, I mean like any quirks, anything quirks. Interesting that are you have to have in place.
I'm not real temperamental.
No,
people call me, I have a nonprofit and the executive director will call me and she's always just like effusive with apologies. Oh, I'm so sorry to bother you at work. It doesn't bother me. Go ahead. What I don't like, I'll tell you what I don't like
is
when
please.
Somebody in another time zone calls me too early.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
One of the greatest features of an iPhone now is you can silence it between 10 at night and 6 in the morning,
true.
Which I do.
That's true.
The first call, I think the first call I ever got from a New York editor was at 4 a.m.
Oh, come on.
That was back in the days before cell phones, back in the Stone Age.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, up with that, I will not put.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just barely, I said to her, Laura Ann, it's 4 a.m. And she said, oh, God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Click. And I'm thinking, yeah, but I'm up now.
Sure.
I know. We have trouble with that with authors because we're in the mountain time zone.
Right. And especially we had to talk to authors in England and it gets very confusing.
Nobody understands the mountain time. And I don't even know what time Alaska's in.
It's not Pacific. Is it Pacific?
We go on daylight savings time. Colorado does too, I think.
Yeah, we are.
So we stay the same hours apart across the year.
Oh, okay.
That's not the case with Arizona.
No, it's not.
Or
not.
Hawaii.
No. Yeah,
it's very confusing.
So you have to like, I hate daylight savings time. It's the worst.
It is.
Now, Dana, you watching anything interesting on TV? Any good show recommendations for us? What do you got?
I just watched The Night Agents on Netflix. And apart from the fact that nobody seems to notice that that guy's phone calls would definitely be recorded, which would massively affect the plot line, I think it was pretty good. It was really well cast, I will say that.
Okay.
I loved everybody I saw on screen. I'm just now beginning to watch the third series of Picard. And I've always been a Star Trek fan, and I have not liked almost any of the later versions. You know, I don't much care for Discovery. It's not an ensemble cast. Mm-hmm. It's all Burnham. And she's great, but I prefer the ensemble. I want to know what's going on with everybody. And I have to say that the fourth episode of the third season of Picard is superb, and that overall, DS9 Voyager series, the third season, Picard has been doing the best job.
Oh, that's great.
And the fourth episode of the third series of Picard is superb. It's brilliant. It is perfectly written. I'm kind of scared to watch the next episode for fear that there's no way it's going to hold up to that.
Wow. That's really
that's
funny.
Always a good feeling to have, though.
That's really great. Funny. Yeah.
Well, Dana, listen, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We loved your book, Not the Ones Dead.
Can I say just like one more thing?
Yeah.
You can say as many things as you want.
I was looking at your website
before I
got on, and I noticed the last guy that you interviewed, Daniel Adhoot, I think his name.
Oh, yeah, Dan Adhoot. Yes.
Yeah. He claims that the heart is the best part of the animal. He's wrong.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going on record as saying that, okay?
Okay.
What do you think the best part of the animal?
Yeah.
Well, the tongue is way better than the heart. The heart is dry and thin and tough, and people overcook it, and it tastes like shoe leather, and it's just awful. The tongue is way better. There's three things that you can eat when you have to let the meat hang normally, like you do beef or any other meat.
Yeah.
But there are three things that you can eat right away on fresh game, and one is tongue, one is heart, and one is liver. And moose liver is a little too gamey, but the tongue is great.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that. I had no idea.
That's a hot tip of the day.
All right, I'm going to believe you over Dan.
Yeah, we're going to believe you over this stand-up comedian guy.
Tell Daniel what I said, okay?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We won't. Thanks so much, Dana. Have a great day up there in Alaska.
Thank you.
This was great. Thank you so much, guys.
You got
Bye.
The Inside Club. All right, thank you so much to Dana Stabenow. Great to talk to her. Check out her book, Not the Ones Dead. All right, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Laura, what do you have?
I have a book called The Whalebone Theater by Joanna Quinn. And apologies for my voice. It's really weak. I feel great, though, thanks to the prednisone.
Yeah. Are you fading? It's 8 o'clock at night now.
No, because I took my second prednisone.
Okay, great.
I could go all night, I think.
Hey, how about that?
Yeah, that's the problem with the prednisone.
Let's review all the books tonight.
Let's just do it. So, by Joanna Quinn. So, this book came out last year. It's a debut, and it's historical fiction, family saga, set in England, and I was reading this while we were in England. It was kind of cool to read when I was able to stay awake at night.
Yeah.
It starts after World War I, and it takes you to the end of World War II. I absolutely love this book. So it's over 500 pages, so it's a long book.
Wow.
The pages really give you time with the characters in this family, and the book covers a lot of ground, which I liked. So this is a story about three siblings who grew up in a large country English estate on the sea. They're the Seagrave children. And we start with them at birth. And they have a neglectful, tragic, and also weirdly magical childhood.
Mm.
So that's kind of captivating to read about. So a whale one day washes to shore. I remember your story,
just like
Andrew.
The last time he went to the
Christmas
resort.
Eve, okay.
Yeah. Also called Christmas Eve in Andrew's mind. So Christabel, the oldest and kind of wildest of these children, declares the bones to be hers, and she starts a wonderful journey where they end up taking these bones, cleaning these whale bones, and erecting a theater out of them from the ribcage of the whale.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
It is wild. And her sister named Flossie and her brother named Digby all have a hand in the play. And this front section of the book where they're creating the plays and doing the stuff, it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. So this is the time in between the two world wars. It's peaceful, but as a reader, we're looking at these dates at the start of each chapter, and I know what's coming. You know, okay, World War II is right around the corner here.
Right, yeah.
And this is going to end soon. So it's just lurking. So that's kind of interesting reading about these idyllic days. There's some sad stuff with these kids. They had a terrible, really honestly, it's kind of a terrible childhood, but it is a little bit magical. But you know there's something worse coming.
Right.
So when World War II arrives, they are of age not necessarily fight, but they contribute. So without giving anything away, each sibling has a fascinating job in the war. And it takes them each to different places in Europe. And even though I've read a lot of World War II fiction, as I'm sure any listener has, this book still felt really fresh. And I think it's because the author had a lot of time to let the characters develop at the front half of this novel. So you really feel like you knew these people. You knew them as children, knew how they grew up.
Interesting.
And it was interesting seeing them operating during the war. So the writing is absolutely superb. The descriptions of the crumbling, many-gabled estate, the kind of mansion, is described really well. The war scenes, the theater scenes are excellent. This author, Joanna Quinn, can write, and I'm really looking forward to what comes next for her.
Nice.
So as you described the book, I almost envisioned a little bit of like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
A little bit, because there's a time of magic, and then there's a time of hard reality with the war.
And there's also the war is mixed into the story as well. And you know, and with The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, there's the juxtaposition that they're in a war, in the real world.
At first
world,
it's, yeah, exactly.
And then they end up getting pulled into a conflict, I'll call it, in this,
That's a really good point.
Into this other world. And you wonder, is there a stronger message to that?
Yeah, for sure. And then they go back. I don't want to give anything away, so I'm not going to.
No.
But theater is continued throughout the book. There are theater, and then we got to see the Tempest.
That's right.
At the Globe, which was absolutely fantastic. I loved
really
it.
Really good.
Probably loved it because it was a shortened, kind of dumbed down American version that I loved.
It wasn't an American.
It wasn't
version.
American. It was for kids.
For kids, for school kids, in their British uniforms,
so Laura
dumping
loved
water
it.
On the American kids down below.
So I have to ask: is it a tale of a whale or a whale of a tale?
It's a whale of a tale.
Whale of a tale.
So I enjoyed that throughout the book. Christabel, one of the siblings, is thinking about the Tempest throughout the book. So there's some interesting parallels with. She's thinking of, not Caliban, but Prospero, the kind of lead head guy, the magician in a way. She's thinking of him as Hitler, and he's able to do whatever he wants with these puppets. And it was fascinating, the different parallels that she thought about during the whole book with Prospero, the one of the leads in the Tempest. So highly recommend it. I loved it. Also, you don't have to care about theater, or Shakespeare to enjoy it.
Whoa.
By the way.
Okay.
It's called The Whalebone Theater by Joanna Quinn. I didn't want to put anybody off if they're
great.
Like, oh,
no,
it's too erudite.
That's true, yeah. All right, and that is recommended by...
Laura Medicus.
And my book this week...
Dave Medicus.
Is, do I love this book so much. Highly recommend this one. It is called Didn't Nobody Give a Shit What Happened to Carlotta? Written by James Hanaham, and it was a finalist.
That sounds like a tube stop that I might have missed because Tim might have pronounced it Hanum.
Hanum. James Hanum.
And I would have looked up there and said, is it Hanaham?
Hanaham. Maybe that is how he pronounced his name. I'm not exactly sure. I can tell you that the book was a finalist for the Los Angeles Times Book Prize from last year. This is darkly comic and seriously original novel about a black woman named Carlotta. Now, she has just been paroled from prison after serving a 20-year sentence for armed robbery. Now, what is interesting about Carlotta is that she entered prison as a man, became a woman
in prison
the first couple of years in prison, and then spent her entire sentence in prison as a woman in the men's population because they did not recognize her as a woman.
That does not sound like a treat.
Oftentimes she had to be put in solitary. And
is
now
this based on a true story?
No, it is not. Okay. Nope. But now she leaves prison as a woman and has to face, among other people.
She still wants to be a woman after that.
She is a woman, but now she's coming out as a woman and has to face up to her family, including her own son, who only knew her as his father.
Oh.
Fascinating stuff. This is going to be just one of the most unique and original voices you will read in fiction this year, as Carlotta's voice. And it is just written very distinctly. A sentence, here's what's interesting about this book. So a sentence or a paragraph will start out in the third person talking about Carlotta. And then in the middle of the paragraph, or the sentence even, it'll slip in a first person point of view.
Oh, does she talk at the narrator?
And she talks as the narrator. Writer? No, she's talking to us in the first person. But it's very, I've never seen this done before.
Was that hard to get used to?
It took a minute to get used to it. But then once I got into it, I was like, I was really digging it. It was so different. It's like seeing Carlotta from two different sides.
I bet it's a great one to listen to.
I bet it would be
interesting to
listen to.
Probably easier to get if you listen to it.
Yeah. Well, this is not the audiobook of the week.
I know. Okay. Just pointing
but it could be. Sure. Why not? Because you're seeing it from the, you know, the third person, you're seeing from it from the unknown narrator's point of view, but then you're seeing her own thoughts and her own voice. So it's written, you know, kind of like these two different languages. Her own language, and her language is very street. It's so street that it's almost poetic. It's amazing the way that she talks and her voice when she's talking to us. It's unvarnished Carlotta. She had never is at a shortage of opinions, beliefs, observations on the world around her. She gives the straight truth and oftentimes shockingly hilarious with her insights and the advice she offers on really not just surviving the real world, being out of prison, but surviving as a trans person in this brand new world of hers. The dialogue, her dialect is so attuned to the rhythm of the streets. It's almost musical. It's fantastic. I was just in awe of the way the dialogue was written out. The book is just such a brilliantly written character study, especially when you stop and consider, like, the book takes place only over the course of a couple of days. Like 99% of it takes place over like 2 or 3 days. So you're getting Carlotta's every, not even just minute by minute, but her second to second thoughts. And just fascinating. I thought it was great to read a book written from the point of view of a trans person. I felt it was an accurate depiction, but what do I know? But it came across as very honest and very accurate. And also what it's just like to be out of prison after 20 years and getting acclimated to the outside world, which is not always a fair place to be. So, so good. Check it out. Yes, Andrew.
So is the author basically transgender or anything like that?
I don't know. I didn't, you know what?
Didn't sometimes, investigate that?
Sometimes you don't investigate. I did not investigate. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Because you just wonder sometimes, like the realism and stuff that authors create.
He's written a number of works. I'm assuming he talked to trans people, you know, doing research. He probably knows some. I would think you would have some kind
You'd
of interest
to,
in it
yeah.
if you're going to write a book about it.
Or maybe you have a child that is, or a brother or sister.
Great book. Didn't nobody give a shit what happened to Carlotta? James Hannam. James Hanaham.
Hanaham.
Hanaham. All right, Andrew.
His palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy.
What do you got for this? You know what I'm going to have to do? This is going to be definitely my song and your song. We'll make it on running a marathon on Saturday. Our songs, our walk-up songs, will make the playlist.
Not song, my slow southern
not
rock?
Not your slow southern rock. Not so much.
Love my southern rock.
Not surprised. So,
this is one of the best all-time songs to run to, though.
I wonder if he plagiarized this song. Never mind. So, my book is by Kyle.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. Why would you say that?
Well, it just seems too good for that guy.
No.
Whoa.
Wait a second.
Eminem
Andrew.
Is one of the brilliant lyricists of our time. He's an amazing lyricist.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
You've seen 8 Mile?
You're selling him way too short.
Come on.
He's
the real deal.
He is okay. a brilliant wordsmith. Okay. Absolutely. No.
So my book, another, speaking of another brilliant wordsmiths, my book is called Shadeslinger. It is written by Kyle Kieran and is book one of the Ripple System.
Andrew's just over here slinging some shade.
It is there we go. It is a lit RPG fantasy book.
What's the name of it again?
It is called Shadeslinger. Yeah. Now,
and let's remind everybody what lit RPG is.
It's literary. You know, and Robert Justice was very excited.
Andrew, you're growing on us.
That because he didn't know what it was either.
A lot of people don't know.
There's an author learning from you.
And here's the thing: I don't know, over the last 10 years, the lit RPGs
evidently has become growing in popularity.
A predominant like class. And I'm not looking for lit RPGs. As a matter of fact, I try and avoid lit RPGs. Wow. So if I review a lit RPG, it's because
it's really good.
It really stands out.
Okay.
And the premise of this book, and first of all, let's talk about shade. What is a shadeslinger? So, Dave, I think you and Laura, Dave, what do you guys think the term shadeslinger
means? Kids talk about it all the time. Yeah. When you sling shade, you're throwing insults at someone's way. You're doing them dirty. It's shade.
Yeah.
And that, it's been around for a while, though.
Yeah. And that is this book, and that's one of the things of this book. But the premise of this book is what got me interested. So the main character's name is Ned, and Ned has... You know, had an extremely wealthy father, probably a multi billionaire. And Ned inherited the business, and Ned managed to run the business into the ground in record time.
Wow.
And so Ned is known throughout the world as like one of the biggest, you know, tech or financial failures in history, right? That is how he is known. But let's just say that's only part of the story. And you might not even get the real story in book one. Like, I'm on book three now of the series, so I'll be careful not to reveal anything. But that's how the world knows Ned, as just one of the biggest failures of all time.
Oh, man.
But what is the truth, right? What is the real perspective there? And if you keep reading the series, you may find out. And so...
If you forgot to mention how many pages this one is.
It's probably pretty long. I can't tell you exactly how many pages it is.
It is 646 pages. Yeah.
That's a lot of words. Yeah.
So, now Ned was also left an IT, like an artificial intelligence. And the artificial intelligence, his name is House. And he names the artificial intelligence House because it pretty much runs his house. It pretty much takes care of things for him. Now, even though Ned's like description or name for House isn't very inventive. He does consider
it's practical.
Well, and he does consider House one of his only friends, right? So he thinks enough of the artificial intelligence to, to recognize. And you may find out that House might be more than she seems, and she's like a female character. Is how House basically comes across. And so now there's a new online world. And it is called Earthblood Online. And this is supposed to be the most realistic online, you know, gaming world. And Ned is just like super excited about it. And the book opens and they've just announced that they're going to be selling 50 spots. 50 exclusive spots that's going to let you play in Earthblood Online for 3 days as a head start.
Okay.
So Ned is like, I am going to buy all 50 spots. And so he does. He immediately puts an offer in, and he basically buys all 50 spots.
Okay.
So he is going to get a Ned only, start
experience
it. So you've got this guy that's this other failure, and Ned sees this really, like, legitimately, he sees this as a fresh start for him. You know, he wants to make something of himself in this other world, a place where he doesn't have the constraints and the ties from his father and from his father's business, right? I mean, was Ned a financial failure because of himself and his characters and his capabilities, or is there more to it? And of course there's more to it. That's because right. Otherwise there wouldn't be a book.
Of course.
So basically, Ned gets this head start, but of course the creator of the game is not going to let Ned just buy the starts. He's going to create conditions. And so one of the conditions is that Ned has to take with him an artificial intelligence that Klein has created. And it comes in the form of an axe, the all-knowing axe, whose name is Frank. Frank the all-knowing axe. And so, but Frank is not a, let's say, massive weapon. He is not some all-inspiring, super-destructive weapon. No. Frank's is, you know, an all-knowing axe. He knows everything. But unfortunately, he can only reveal information to Ned if Ned kind of sort of already knows about that information.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, it's like...
There's always a rule.
Yeah, there's always a rule. Now, yeah. Now Frank knows everything. He just can't reveal it.
Right.
Right? And so, and so Frank doesn't like Ned. He doesn't like the situation he's in. And so, of course, there's a lot of shade slinging from Frank to Ned. Right? There's a lot of back and forth. And so you have sort of this contentious relationship, or at least starts out contentious. So you got this talking axe. And yes, there are a lot of stiff shaft jokes in the book.
Oh, boy.
No, right? Boy.
Maybe not too many. But
it sounds like it's a funny book.
And it is. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of humor in the book. And of course, you know, everybody in the world knows of Ned before he does this. Then he pulls this stunt. And so he all of a sudden becomes the most hated gamer in the history of online gaming.
Yeah.
Right? So the book is Shadeslinger by Kyle Kieran, book one in the Epic series Ripple System.
All right. And recommended by
Andrew Dowd, audiobook of the week.
Which means it's time for the audiobook of the week. And I got a good one for you this week. It is called Joe Victim by Paul Cleave, narrated by Paul Ansdell. Oh. Sorry, Paul Ansdell. So you got the author and narrator, both named Paul. Maybe it was a package deal. I don't know. This is a second in the series, but when I got this book, I didn't know it was the second in the series until I was like halfway through.
That's good.
So it didn't really matter.
Clearly it didn't matter.
It is set in New Zealand. The author is a New Zealand writer. This is a psychological thriller that is a pulse-pounding, fast-paced, darkly funny portrait of a serial killer, told mainly from the killer's point of view. His name is Joe Middleton, but he is better known as the Christchurch Carver.
Ooh.
Now, he's in prison in the book, and his plan, as he's awaiting trial, is to play dumb and act like he doesn't remember any of the killings, and he's trying to convince the psychiatrist that he is not of sound mind and therefore cannot be convicted of these killings. Meanwhile, in the outside world...
Smart.
Yes. Yeah. that always works, right? Meanwhile, in the outside world, a woman named Melissa, she is planning on shooting Joe as he is transported to the courthouse for his trial. Now, the reason why she wants to shoot him is not because she's a family member of one of his victims. No, it is because she was an accomplice of his in one of the murders.
And she doesn't want him to sing?
And she does not want him to sing like a canary. That is correct. Huh. So she actually gets help. She enlists the help of a man who is a family member of a victim, a guy who runs a support group. Now, Joe, however... He's got it. Now, you know, there's Joe. He's a serial killer in prison. He's got himself a little plan on how to escape, which involves a psychic who helps the police and the detective who arrested him. A detective, by the way, who is now no longer on the force because of some things that he did, and he's now a consultant for reality TV shows. I love this book.
That's a good start.
Yeah, it is a great setup, a great book. It's full of dark humor. So fun. I have moments in this book where I was literally laughing out loud.
Wow.
So
I wouldn't have thought that with this
subject matter, you wouldn't think this, and you wouldn't think listening to a serial killer who's trying to pass himself. It's a very funny voice he's got. Very original. Really enjoyed it. Different. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is Joe Victim by Paul Cleave, narrated by Paul Ansdell.
He moves over to the wardrobe. He drags a box of clothes out and lifts the patch of carpet and digs a screwdriver into the edge of the floor, and Melissa finds herself rolling her eyes, thinking how lucky guys like Derek are that they can't be charged for stupidity along with other crimes. He pries up the boards. He pulls out an aluminium case the length of his arm. Melissa stands up so he can lay it on the bed. He pops the lid open. There is a rifle broken into separate pieces, all of it slotting into foam cutouts.
AR-15, he says, Lightweight. Uses a high-velocity, small-caliber round. Extremely accurate. Scope 2, as requested.
Audiobook of the week. All right, there you go. Check it out. I think, well, if you're anything like me, go for a run and listen to this book. You'll like it. All right, anyway, thank you so much to our guest, Dana Stabenow, for joining us. Always great chatting with her. We appreciate her. Check out her book, Not the Ones Dead. That'll do it for us this week. And next week, we'll be back with stories that aren't related to England. So that'll be nice. We finally got it done. Hey, a hell of a lot went on in that trip.
It did.
My name is Dave Medica. See you next time.
Adios.
Excelsior.
I'm working on channeling through my subconscious right now.